Welcome to Take Note on WPESU. I'm Patty Satalia. The Arava Institute in Israel works to help Israel, Palestine, and Jordan extend and share the scarce water resources in the area. The group's ultimate agenda is to use the environment to promote peace. WPSU's Emily Reddy talks about managing water resources among nations in political conflict with Clive Lipchin. He's director of the Center for Transboundary Water Management at the Arava Institute.
Clive Lipchin, thank you for talking with us.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here. Thank you.
So first, can you describe the natural water situation in these three countries, Israel, Palestine, and Jordan? They're very arid countries, right?
Yeah, we're in a situation of water scarcity due to the fact that we are in a desert region where water availability is naturally low. So we have very, very limited natural water resources that need to be shared amongst these three countries. At the same time, populations are growing, demand for water is increasing. And so we basically have this challenge of an increasing gap between supply and demand. And the challenge that we're facing is, of course, how to close this gap.
And these countries are used to dealing with drought, but the likelihood is, along with increasing population, they're going to be seeing more droughts, longer droughts, worse droughts as climate change makes its mark.
I mean, what we're seeing, and we have looked at this over the years, the norm in our region is drought. Droughts are common. The challenge that we have to address moving into the future with the impact of climate change is the droughts are becoming longer and more extreme, again, as the demand for water is increasing. So effective water management in our part of the world is about how to overcome shortages, which are going to become more problematic in the future.
And in a very real example of necessity being the mother of invention, Israel has come up with some very creative solutions to deal with these water shortages. Can you talk about what Israel has done?
The way I would explain how Israel has sort of approached this issue is we understand, again, with the reality of droughts and increasing demand for water, that we need to decouple ourselves from the fact that water is scarce naturally. If we don't do that, our water resources would be drastically overexploited to the point where we would be doing major ecological damage to the scarce resource that we have. And so what Israel has done, and this began intensively, I would say around 20 years ago, is we took a very good look at non-conventional water and said, how do we develop these water resources effectively? How do we take what is considered to be low-quality water and turn it into high-value water, primarily for agriculture? So the Israeli approach has been to leverage technology to take this low-quality water and put it into productive use. And we've done this in two ways. Firstly, in the early 2000s, the decision was to invest quite heavily in large-scale seawater desalination, in essence, to turn, of course, seawater into fresh drinking water. Our first large-scale seawater facility opened in 2005. Today, we have five of the world's largest seawater reverse osmosis desalination plants. We have five of these facilities along the Mediterranean coast. The first one was brought online in 2005. And what this has done has allowed Israel to provide close to 70% of our drinking water from desalination. The second approach, which is both one, I would say, of water supply and water demand management, is we have adopted the opportunities to treat and reuse wastewater in agriculture. We collect over 90% of our sewage, and we invest in the treatment of that sewage to a very high quality, to where we are able to take around 80% of that treated sewage and put it back into agriculture. And this, again, is allowing us to slowly pull back our reliance on fresh water in agriculture and replacing that with treated wastewater. So these two strategies, wastewater treatment and reuse on the one hand, with a focus on better managing water in the agricultural sector, and large-scale seawater desalination on the other for better management of water in the domestic sector has allowed Israel to actually move from a reality of water scarcity to actually to a reality of a water surplus, even with droughts and growing demand being a reality in our region.
Now, the desalinization process, isn't that expensive?
It is expensive and it consumes a lot of energy. Now, the way in which we've addressed both of those issues is the cost of these facilities has been borne by the government entering into public-private partnerships. No government can bear the full cost of such large infrastructure investment, but the private sector has the ability to do so. And of course, the expertise in the installation of these facilities and the operation of maintenance of these facilities is with the private sector. So the government has developed a very well-managed system for what is called build, operate, transfer partnerships, where we enter into an agreement with the private sector where they bear the responsibility of raising the initial capital cost for investment for the installation of the facility. And then there's an agreement between the government and, in essence, the private facility on purchasing the water at a fixed price, which allows the company to recoup its capital investment. And then after a certain period of time, the facility is transferred from the hands of the private sector to that of the government.
And Israel's goal by 2050 is to get to the point where 90% of the water used from agriculture is reclaimed water, either from effluent or seawater that is desalinated. How far off is Israel right now?
We're actually ahead of the curve, to be honest. As I said earlier, in terms of potable water from seawater desalination, we are close to 70%. And we are close to 60% of our agricultural needs for irrigation coming from treated wastewater. So we're close to where we want to be. Of course, fresh water will always still be needed. But the fact that we can use less fresh water allows us to help our natural systems to replenish, minimizes the ecological damage of over-exploitation of these resources, and really provides Israel with maneuverability in how to manage water under conditions of drought, demand, and so on. The other very important point of all of this is the fact that we can now move from a situation of scarcity to, I wouldn't say abundance, but from scarcity to surplus. We then have the ability to provide additional water to our neighbors, specifically Jordan and the Palestinians. They are still in a water scarce situation, and because our natural water resources are shared, there's an obligation to find regional solutions to the problem. This is not just a problem that Israel is facing, the region is facing the problem.
Is there worry about making sure that this water is safe? I mean, there are always worries about runoff on farms or drinking treated water.
Yes, safety is definitely an issue. And again, I think the success that Israel has achieved in this area is not only on the technological side, but that this can't work unless the whole process is very effectively regulated. So there is a very strong partnership between government and industry or government and farming that is making sure that this treated or recycled water is made available and is done effectively and safely. So water quality standards are very strict in Israel. The agricultural sector and the desalination sector are very heavily regulated to ensure that there aren't going to be any safety issues, issues of contamination and so on. So in essence, this kind of approach can only work if, in addition to finding the right technical solutions, you need very, very strong government oversight and regulation to make it work.
And you need cooperation between these countries that don't always see eye to eye in other areas. I mean, how does this work that you do with water lead to stronger partnerships in other ways?
So it's no secret, of course, that we are in a region and in a situation of conflict with our neighbors. Water is one of those contentious issues, but water also is pretty much understood by everybody, irrespective of the disagreements we may have on many issues. That water, of course, is a basic human right, and everybody needs it. So, you know, we may have many differences and many disagreements, but when it comes to managing water, there is an opportunity to actually leverage the issue of water to promote and develop cooperation. So a lot of the work that we do at the Arava Institute is to use water as a bridge to peace building. Nobody wants to go without water. Again, it's a human right. One cannot deny water to anybody, whether friend or foe, let's put it that way. And so with the case of water, cooperation is essential to ensure that sufficient water is made available to everybody. And this is really the point in which we operate to find those mechanisms of cooperation over water, and then to build on those cooperative mechanisms on water to try to help leverage cooperation in some of the other spheres where we have disagreements.
And you pretty much have to. I mean, there's the fact that water, it flows, it moves back and forth between these areas. And Israel uses a lot of recycled water or desalinated water. Palestine doesn't do much of that. And in fact, there can be polluted water that that leaves that country and goes into Israel.
Yeah, and this is, again, one of the challenges is that Israel is an advanced country and has developed these effective mechanisms. Palestine is a country sort of in the making, so to speak, that doesn't yet have those types of opportunities in terms of economic development. That is part of the conflict as well. Nevertheless, there's a lot of opportunity to see where Israel can assist the Palestinians in adopting appropriate technologies and other measures to manage water. And again, as you rightly say, water flows, you know, ignores political borders. We as human beings cannot. We have to understand that reality. But it's clear that it's in everybody's interest to, wherever possible, minimize pollution and problematic sewage flows, because what starts off in one place is very quickly going to appear in another place. So it's clear that there's a common interest, whether one is Palestinian or Israeli, to do whatever can be done to try to minimize these pollution events. I'm not saying it's easy. There are many difficulties in how this can be done. But the people that I work with, whether they be Israeli or Palestinian, all really understand and have a common agenda to do whatever can be done to resolve these cross-border pollution flows.
You are listening to Take Note on WPSU. If you're just joining us, Emily Reddy is talking with Clive Lipchin, the director of the Center for Transboundary Water Management at the Arava Institute. The institute helps countries share environmental resources with the goal of promoting peace.
You say that there's also a difference in the way that Israelis and Palestinians think about their claim to water. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there's an interesting debate in terms of the different perceptions on how to resolve the water conflict between Israelis and Palestinians. On the Palestinian side, the narrative is very much one of rights and sovereignty to water. And that makes sense because the Palestinians are in a process of nation building. There is no sovereign state of Palestine as yet, but the intention amongst Palestinians and the international community, of course, is that there will be a Palestinian state. So one strategy for Palestinians in moving towards sovereignty is to view the water issue as part of this move towards sovereignty. And so for Palestinians, the issue of water is very much entrenched in ones of rights and sovereignty to the water. And for Israel to grant Palestinians recognition of those rights and to quantify those rights. This is a very important position for the Palestinian community. On the Israeli side, the argument is more about one of needs of water, in the sense Israel understands that Palestinians need more water, but there's a hesitancy on the Israeli side to couch the issue in ones of sovereignty and rights, the Israeli argument being that those issues need to wait until there are actually negotiations happening on a peace process. And so the rights issue should be tabled until that process happens, but there's nothing preventing the needs of water to be met. And this is where Israel, again, today is in a position to do this. We can provide more water to meet the needs for Palestinians or for other countries in the region like Jordan. So there are these two arguments. They both are valid. But unfortunately, we're still not finding sort of the middle ground where a water rights argument on one hand can meet that of a water needs argument on the other. Again, this is some of the work that we at the Institute are working on, because we work with both sides. We have a common interest to resolve the issue. And so bringing the stakeholders from both sides to begin to discuss, you know, the pros and cons of both arguments so that we can move towards a common agreed narrative to how to resolve the water issue is very much part of what we do at the Institute.
And you mentioned Jordan, a country which has seen its water needs increase by 300% in recent years because of an influx of Syrian refugees.
Yeah, Jordan is in a very, very difficult position. Jordan is one of the world's most water-scarce countries. And if that wasn't bad enough, the influx of Syrian refugees over the last couple of years has very, very much strained Jordan's ability to not only meet its own needs for its own population, but now for approximately 1 million Syrian refugees.
There's the Zaatari refugee camp in Jordan, which is huge.
Yeah, the Zaatari refugee camp houses around 500,000 refugees. This camp was set up as a humanitarian reaction to the rapid influx of Syrian refugees fleeing the conflict in Syria. The problem that we're facing with Zaatari and other refugee camps in Jordan is that what was planned to be a temporary humanitarian measure has very quickly turned into something permanent. As the Syrian war, you know, grinds on and nobody really sees an end in sight, unfortunately, the Syrian refugee population in Jordan is very quickly turning into a permanent population, and Zaatari is turning from a refugee camp to a permanent settlement. The problem is, because the camp was set up as a temporary measure, no planning in water, wastewater infrastructure was ever considered. Now these issues have to be taken into consideration. These people are living here. Many of the refugees have been there now for a number of years. And this is one of the challenges when one deals with a refugee crisis. How do you plan effectively for these kinds of services, water, wastewater, energy? The initial focus is always on humanitarian aid. Now we're in a situation where Zaatari is turning from a refugee camp to an actual city with no infrastructure in place. And of course, bringing that infrastructure after the fact is difficult and it's expensive, but it has to be done. I would argue that the refugee crisis is part of what has spurred even greater Israeli-Jordanian cooperation, because Jordan knows that if it looks around, where can it get more water from? The only country that can effectively provide more water to Jordan is Israel. And we have a peace treaty with Jordan, and within that treaty, there is a lot that talks about how the two countries share transboundary water between the two. And there's also opportunities within that treaty to, again, see how more water can be provided to Jordan, both for its own needs and, of course, for the needs of the refugees. So it's really interesting to think, you know, that in some ways Israel, which comes under a lot of criticism, is helping the Syrian refugees, even though we do not have any diplomatic relations with Syria or aren't technically at war with Syria. And it makes sense, because it's in Israel's interest as much as it is in Jordan's interest to do whatever we can to ensure that there is stability in Jordan, both politically and other. And one way to ensure that there is stability is to ensure that the refugee crisis is managed effectively. And one way to do that is with water. And so Jordan's water security and therefore its political stability is very much dependent and intertwined with Israel's water security and stability as well. And that's a very good thing. The more we become interdependent on our environmental resources, the more we understand that we need to be interdependent on all the other issues. Once we tie our future water security through cooperation, then in my estimation, all the other outstanding issues and disagreements that we have, they are always going to be important, but all of a sudden we see, hey, you know, if we can cooperate on water, why can't we cooperate on everything else?
And there's a new cooperation underway. The Arava Institute is now working on a project with solar panels, again, requiring cooperation between these countries.
Right. I mean, another very important issue that is essential in water management is water requires energy, whether one is treating it or moving it or storing it. And in our region, given that we're in an arid area, there actually is a lot of opportunity to develop solar energy. And within the renewable energy sector as well, there is developing lots of cooperation and integrating solar energy specifically into water management. And so at the Institute, we're beginning to explore and promote this intersection between water and energy, what people talk term the water energy nexus. There's a lot of opportunity in bringing renewables, promoting innovation in solar technology and other renewable energy technologies in terms of what is needed for effective water management.
The Western United States has had severe drought issues in recent years, and the United States does very little water reclamation or desalination. What can the United States use of the resources that we've talked about, those developed for the Middle East?
Yeah, I think that, the U.S. could take a look at Israel as an example of what can be done. You know, Israel was in the 90s in a very similar situation in what's happening now out west. We were in a very, very critical drought. Our natural water resources were severely overextended. Desalination had not yet come online, and we were in a major, major crisis. But we turned the corner because the government basically made a very strategic decision and said, we are going to invest in desalination and we're going to make this happen. And they did. They did it very effectively, very efficiently in a very short period of time. And that really was the turning point for Israel. So I think that if Israel can do this, other places can as well. I'm not saying it's a clear copy and paste situation. The reality in the West is not the same in Israel. But the fact is, Israel did it. And if Israel can do it, then I don't see why the U.S. West and the southwestern states can't look to Israel for inspiration and see where appropriate Israeli technologies and water management approaches could be adopted and adapted to helping the U.S. Southwest, California, Nevada, integrate some of the Israeli experiences so that they can resolve their own water crisis.
What do you see as the major hurdles for making that happen?
Well, I think that if I look and see what's happening out west, there's no reason why these technologies wouldn't be adopted. The U.S. has all the capacity that it needs to build these systems, to operate and manage them. I also don't think financial resources are not available. The biggest challenge facing the implementation of these approaches in places like California is a very, very, very complex and decentralized policy framework. Unlike in Israel, where water is considered as a public good, managed by the government on behalf of the public, in the U.S. Southwest, water is a private good. There are water rights. People own water. Water is like a property right. And so to change things like the adoption of desalination or wastewater reclamation is much, much more difficult when you have these issues of ownership. How do you implement the right incentives to get farmers who own water rights to become more efficient? How does the federal government or the state find the right incentives to encourage people who own water to use it differently? So the policy landscape is really the challenge. And, you know, that's something that only the U.S. can deal with. Looking to Israel for inspiration is good, but changing that, of course, is not going to be easy. But at least starting a conversation on rethinking these kinds of ideas, that would be a positive step that I think would be very encouraging if we saw that happening.
What about here locally in Pennsylvania? I know that you met with some groups here to talk about, you know, what the Middle East is doing could be used here in Pennsylvania and in the Chesapeake Bay watershed.
So, you know, Pennsylvania, of course, doesn't have a water scarcity situation as extreme as Israel. So, although, of course, it can happen. And drought is something that does occur in Pennsylvania, as it does in pretty much anywhere. I think that one area that I found of interesting in my discussions with water professionals here in Pennsylvania was how would you encourage the adoption of wastewater reuse for farming? This is a very agricultural region. And of course, the agricultural sector is the largest consumer of water. So how do you encourage farmers and water utilities and others to adopt water reclamation as we do in Israel? And it was very interesting to me to find out that water reuse does occur in Pennsylvania, but the large-scale rollout of that is being prevented because the government does not recognize water reuse as a water that can be used. It's still considered sewage. So these are the kinds of things that have to be looked at, and how do you engage with the government to rethink these kinds of issues? And I would say the value of an Israeli experience here is to show to the government, look, water reuse can be done, it can be reused very effectively, and it can be done safely. Israel has been doing it for decades. So getting government and decision makers to become aware that in other places of the world, water reclamation has been adopted effectively, safely, and efficiently, that could encourage the governments to rethink how they permit and regulate water resources.
Looking back at the Middle East for a moment, can these water issues ever totally be solved before there is a peace between these countries?
No. Short answer. We need to be realistic. I certainly am not of the position that we can keep moving along without a peace agreement. There must be a peace agreement. Then this issue has to be resolved. It's simply irresponsible and naive if anybody thinks that the status quo is in any way sustainable. It's absolutely not. That being said, we also just can't sit back and wait for a peace agreement to happen when it comes to thinking about water and our other environmental resources. We have to act on those issues immediately and move those issues forward as best as we can. And that's exactly what we do at the Institute. But we're not under the impression that, you know, all of this is going to magically lead to a resolution. Our governments must take responsibility. They must come to the table and they must resolve this issue. There needs to be a peace agreement. There needs to be the establishment of a Palestinian state. I think the work that we do can encourage that movement towards an agreement, even if it's sort of on the margins. We work at a people-to-people approach. We work with communities. We work bottom-up. But that bottom-up work, you know, can trickle upwards to the governments where they can see that irrespective of whether one is Israeli or Palestinian, there is real cooperation happening in the water sector and that the government should encourage that and see how it can take it further. We are trying at the Institute to promote cooperation in the water sector as a means towards promoting a dialogue that will eventually end in an agreement for an independent Palestinian state.
Clive Lipchin, thank you for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
That was Clive Lipchin, the director of the Center for Transboundary Water Management at the Arava Institute, talking with WPSU's Emily Reddy. To hear other interviews in the Take Note series, check the links on our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.